the sight of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. How all these things in our memories haunt and they use them to help us to
take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Have you heard the announcement yet from Caltech today? You know Sitchin's theory, right? About the 12th planet, the planet that comes by, that came by a long time ago and created all of us human beings to mine gold for them. You know about that, right? Sitchin's theory. Well, from Caltech today, Earth-like planets that were ejected from our infant solar system might just be warm and wet enough to support life, scientists reported Wednesday. Now, these are planets that adhere by orbit to no sun. You could think of them as rogue planets, if you will. It says because hydrogen would have been abundant at that stage of solar system development, any ejected planets would have been swathed in hydrogen, presumably allowing them to retain surface temperatures comparable to Earth and possibly even water oceans. Without sunlight, the radioactivity inside an Earth-like interstellar planet would only raise the temperature to a bit above absolute zero, but a thick blanket of hydrogen would prevent much of the internally generated heat from escaping, thus keeping the exiled planet comfortably cozy. That means a planet could be coursing through space, carrying life and oceans and atmosphere, just zooming through a rogue planet. So many people turned up their nose at Sitchin, and all of a sudden comes Caltech to say, guess what, folks? Everything we thought might have been true, well, it may not be. Once again. All right, Neil Slade talks about our brain. Neil Slade studied with TDA Lingo, one of the world's great brain researchers. Neil Slade is going to talk to you about things tonight and this morning that are going to seem fantastic to you. But I urge you to keep an open mind, because every time we close our minds, somebody comes along and shoves a fact through our little brains that seems to pierce all we thought was previously true, as evidenced by this Caltech story. Planets that can exist as rogue planets without a sun, that would be as comfortable as Earth with an atmosphere and oceans and beings, life? Sounds to me like they're preparing us for the truth, whatever the truth really is. And I don't know. If this doesn't ring bells for you with respect to Sitchin, then your bell cannot be rung, is what I would say. Now, let us talk to Neil Slade. Neil, welcome back. We promised, I think, about 3 weeks ago when you were on for about an hour. We would do an entire show.
Yes.
And here it comes.
Thanks for inviting me back.
You bet.
Always fun.
Great to have you. Now, tell me some of your early experience with TDA.
Lingo, if you would.
He was probably one of the most interesting people I will ever get to know. I first saw T.D. Lingo on our local public television station, and someone had made a documentary film about his life and his work.
And what was his work?
Well, he always tells his story from the beginning in during World War II, and he was a scout for Patton's Army.
Right.
He was in the Battle of the Bulge, and he was one of the first people to arrive at one of the concentration camps. I believe it was Dachau, which he had gone to. And after he finished with his experience during the war, which he found horrific,
of course,
he decided to pursue behavior studies and brain science. And he went to four universities, the last one being the University of Chicago, where he was working on his PhD in behavioral science. And at that time, he asked one of his professors of neurology, why must I kill my brother? Because he was still wondering what was all this World War II thing? What was the mentality behind this? How did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And he asked this question, and his professor pointed to his own gray head. He says, I don't know what the answer to that question is, and we don't yet know the answer to that in academia, but if there is an answer to it, it's up here. And the professor pointed to his own skull.
He says, in other words, why we are a warrior people.
He says, the answer is in the human brain. He said, if you want to go slow, then you stay in the university system. But if you want to go fast, you drop out of the traditional academic world and you start your own research program.
Sure.
So this is what Lingo decided to do.
And what was the form or the nature of the research that he pursued privately?
Well, what's very interesting about this, he didn't directly go into research because he didn't have the money to do it, you know, to set up a lab.
When you leave the universities, the money dries up.
Money dries up. So he thought, well, what can I do? And he thought about it. Well, let's see, I can tell a good story, and I know three chords on the guitar. So what he did is he became a folk singer in Denver, and he started playing around all the nightclubs and night spots in Denver, and he got a radio show on KFML here, and he built up a reputation, and he somehow managed to get himself on Groucho Marx's You Bet Your Life television show.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so he went on that show. And he did well, and then he ended up on another show, and I can't recall what show it was, but he won $16,000 on that show. So he saved that money.
Hmm.
And then a Hollywood producer saw him on the Groucho Marx show,
mm-hmm.
and he said, hey, I know a good phony when I see one, and that guy is a great one, right? Because what Lingo did is he dressed up, he was from Colorado.
Yeah.
He dressed up in buckskins and a coonskin cap, and he played the part of the backwoods, and he sang folk songs, right?
Yeah.
And he called himself Lingo the Drifter from Lookout Mountain. And if you're from Denver, you know Lookout Mountain is right to the west of Denver, and on top of Lookout Mountain, they don't have trees. They have radio and television antennas.
Right.
They didn't know this in New York or Hollywood, right? But anyway, so they brought him out to... Groucho Marx was in Hollywood. So it was in New York, the producer saw him. And they brought him to New York, and they gave him a summer replacement show on NBC, national television.
Uh-huh.
And he had people like Burl Ives and Woody Guthrie on, and you can still, once in a while, you can run into these old tapes of this program. And he did this first summer, and they paid him like $2,000 an hour to do this show.
An hour?
He did it And back in this is back in 1956.
So now he's beginning to accumulate some money.
Now he's getting some money. Now, on the very last show, he still got his research lab in the back of his mind during all of this. He looks into the camera and he says to the million viewers watching, if anybody out there has a mountain to sell, call me. Right? And so somebody from back again in Colorado called him, and they had 350 acres of wilderness located at about 10,000 feet in about 40 miles west of Denver. So Lingo took his two grocery sacks full of money that he made from NBC, and he gave one to the IRS, and he gave the other one to the guy who owned the land, and now he had his the land for his laboratory.
Now that is a cool story.
Yeah. So he went up there, and he began to build log cabin facility.
Yes.
Right? Because he still really didn't have a lot of money.
Right.
Because he blew it all on the taxes and the land.
Land, sure.
But he had all this tremendous educational background. So he had a good start. And in a couple years, he had built several buildings up there, and he began to run programs. And one of the first programs that he ran was for juvenile delinquents. And these were uncontrollable juveniles that were in the court system that needed some kind of
behavior modification
mm-hmm. and counseling. So this was the first group that he did. And he did that for several years and began his long-term studies on his students. And he had quite a number there are a couple of famous people who came through there that I don't feel I'm at liberty to disclose.
Oh, no, that's quite all right.
People who know the history, their eyes usually pop open when they hear.
How much luck did he have with these uncontrollable delinquents?
He was extremely successful. In fact, what would happen is the kids would come up, spend the summer from them, and then they would go back to Denver, and there was nothing left for the state to do with these kids. And
well, all right, what methods did he use that you can tell us about that accounted for that much success?
Well, the first thing he began to do is there were a couple of methods that he used, and these are things that I also teach my students and people who buy the books. All these methods are, I continue to let people know. One of them is called self-trauma drama. And what it is, it's a method that he developed utilizing practices and theories that came from a variety of psychiatric types of sources. And essentially what you're doing is you're reprogramming negative conditioning and memories in the brain. When people get into trouble and have bad behaviors,
right?
Okay, this is a result of a negative programming that they've learned from parents, from teachers, and peers. And normally, these types of behavior problems they stem from repressed memories.
So he reprogrammed.
He showed these people how to, first of all, uncover these negative traumas. Okay, and then to reprogram them and to teach one how to deal with the same situations using more of the brain and frontal lobe types of behaviors. Okay, it's like learning from the past mistakes of your parents and teachers and peers and using that and doing a judo flip inside the brain and turning what was a negative event into a positive event. And the methods that he uses is slightly different from things like primal scream therapy other kinds of previous therapies that people tried. He discovered some additional things that would help accelerate the process and actually make the results turn out considerably, considerably better. And at this time, he began to discover what that connection was between the amygdala and the frontal lobe and how people could self-stimulate specific areas.
Yeah, I was about to ask, how do we get from intriguing, successful behavior modification of the kind you talked about.
Yeah.
To manipulation of physical things by the brain. I mean, that's quite a leap.
Well, it's not such a leap because brain and behavior research is always looking for neurological explanations for why a person may behave in such a way. What is the connection between the state of the brain and behavior? And of course, all our behavior comes out of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can understand how the brain works, then you'll understand how behavior
works. I don't understand how the brain works.
Okay.
I'm being honest with you. I don't understand how our brains could, for example, when concentrating on a cloud, punch a hole in the cloud, or even better yet, cause that cloud to dissipate entirely. And here's where I'm sure a lot of eyes out in the audience roll.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, it really does work. Now, there simply is no question about it. It works, folks. We're going to tell you about it when we get back. My guest is Neil Slade. And you, too, can bust clouds. Now, I know, roll your eyes if you want to, but when we come back, we'll demonstrate to you how it works. We have photographs, if you've got a computer, and we'll tell you how you can do it yourself. It's just one of those things you can file away when you're lying around on the next cloudy day that you can do, that I guarantee, sorry for the pun, will blow your mind. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Okay, your brain, very simply, is three layers. The most inner section is called the reptile brain.
And that controls what?
That controls all the basic mechanisms of survival. It keeps your breathing regulated, your temperature. It keeps your heart beating correctly. It computes fight or flight. Just the basic stuff that keeps you alive. That's why...
All right, this takes me back to Mike the Headless Chicken.
Yeah, right.
Right? We had a Mike the Headless Chicken who lived without a head. Oh, God, he lived for years.
Yes.
Until he finally choked on a kernel of corn that he was being fed down his headless neck.
Esophagus or whatever.
Yeah, it got stuck in there and poor Mike died. But the fact is, Mike lived on, headless, as a chicken for...
Because he had enough of his reptile brain left. That part of, he still had that, the very inner core of the brain that the guy missed with the axe. So that was able to keep all the body mechanisms going.
We've got a photograph of Mike the Headless Chicken on my website. It's a hell of a story, and it really does prove what Neil is saying right now about the reptile brain, our very basic brain. Is it the stem, Neil?
You call it the brain stem.
Uh-huh.
Lots of people like the term medulla oblongata, which is part of this reptile brain. It's really just it sits on the very top end of your spinal cord. You know, I mean, worms have a brain stem. It's a fish, reptile. It doesn't compute any emotion. It doesn't compute any higher thought.
Right.
Okay. So when this energy is flowing through our brain and body, the first place it has to flow through is the reptile brain.
Right.
If the reptile brain is destroyed, then that system does no longer exist.
Hundreds of thousands or millions of years ago, do you believe there were human beings? I don't know if that's a fair statement. That there were two-legged creatures that had nothing essentially more than a reptile brain.
Not the hominid, because if we evolved, you know, I mean, the evolution...
I'm asking you whether these other layers of brain that we're about to talk about are a product of evolution.
Yeah.
Or a product of something else.
No, as animals became more complex through billions of years, the brain evolved along with the rest of the body. So by the time you got an ape-like creature, it had a much more developed brain. So... As reptiles developed into mammals, then they grew a bigger brain. They grew another layer of brain, which is called the mammal brain.
Okay, but that's evolution.
Yes.
So it is evolution.
Yes.
All right. So we've got
the opinion of most everybody.
Well, Believe me, I could light up the phones and you could have a fight about that for the next 3 hours. We won't do that. So okay. You've got the reptile brain.
Right. So the energy flows through the reptile brain first, then it goes to the next layer, up and out, called the mammal brain. And this adds on emotion, right? Now dogs and cats have this mammal brain also.
You can see them get angry. You can see them get happy.
And they also add on some basic social behaviors. Okay?
Yes.
Now, the amygdala,
licking,
this magical quick switch, this master quick switch in the brain is also located in this mammal brain. But we'll come back to that. Now, apes and humans have yet another layer of brain called the primate brain. And this adds on all the more complicated human types of behaviors that we know of.
Language,
math, planning. But the most advanced part being the frontal lobe. If you grab your forehead, it's everything underneath your hand. Okay?
Yes.
All right. So the energy goes through the reptile brain. It gets to this emotional part of the brain, the mammal brain.
Right.
Now, if the basic emotional needs are met, okay, if you're not worried about survival, okay, it reaches a critical point in this limbic system, which is another word for mammal brain, and it reaches the amygdala gateway. There are other gateways in the brain, but we like to concentrate on the amygdala because it simplifies things. The amygdala switch in the mammal brain either blocks or reverses this energy back down to recomputed in the reptile brain, or it sends further forward to compute creative, cooperative, intelligent expression, or it flows out through the primate brain and frontal lobe to reconnect with the universe. Okay? So if you can imagine, life is a cycle. We know by looking at environment that everything that is alive, everything that moves in a circle. So energy starts out in universe, it enters our body, it flows into the reptile brain, then it flows out, and then it reconnects where it started from, just a cycle with the rest of the universe. If the flow stops at the individual and never moves past the reptile brain and lower mammal brain, this life force energy becomes like a stagnant pond, or becomes like a balloon that just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
All right. As we look at people at extremes, let's say Charlie Manson, at one extreme, Mother Teresa at the other, or some other great figure. What difference would there be in the way their brain operated?
Charlie Manson had his amygdala clicked fully backwards into reptile brain, okay? He was clicked into killer instinct. He was clicked into fight or flight, permanent fear, paranoia, okay, which created violent behavior.
Yes.
Okay, that's a person with the amygdala clicked all the way backwards. Mother Teresa is someone who we could say had her amygdala clicked fully forward. The energy flowed out from Mother Teresa to the universe.
Yes.
Okay, this is why saints, through history, we hear miracle stories of saints and holy people that can do all these miraculous feats. They can levitate. They can make Sai Baba, the holy man in India, can materialize things in his hands. We hear of Jesus walking across the water. People who have the energy flowing completely, fully.
Now, I'm going to throw you for a little loop. I hope you don't mind.
No.
But I want this answer to this question.
Hard questions make me a better teacher.
Hitler was not what we would call a good man.
Uh-huh.
But Hitler might have been a great man in terms of achievements. Horrible things that he did.
Yeah.
But he was extremely, extremely successful, at least for a period of time. Now, that is a dynamic, charismatic, evil personality.
Yeah.
So are you sure that it is not possible that somebody could click their amygdala forward and use it
pursue negative ends. What Hitler is a good example, because the mentalist switch is like a rheostat. It's not just on or off. It's more like the thermostat on your wall. You can click it. You know, you've got two amygdalas. You've got one in the right hemisphere of your brain, the right side of your brain. You've got one in the left side of your brain. And these switches are independent. So you can have your right switch click forward and your left switch click backward. Okay? You can control the amount of energy that is flowing in different parts of your brain, and it's just not on or off.
Well, I've got a story here that says ruckus over time hole of most influential soul. Some name Hitler, others want Jesus. Nobody's happy. They're doing this big poll right now.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you, at the time of the printing of this article, Hitler was being named as the most influential soul. So how could you even, I mean, it's terribly controversial, of course, Time Magazine, but how could you be the most influential soul without using the higher functions of the brain, in other words, having your amygdala click forward?
Well, I think, you know, whether or not you have influence on people is no indication of whether or not you're influencing people for bad or good, or for positive or negative.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but to be such a leader, a charismatic figure, surely we are detecting functions not from the reptile portion of the brain, but from the forward portion of the brain. So I guess the bottom line is the forward portions of the brain can be used not only for good, but for evil as well.
To a certain extent, and Hitler is the perfect example of this. He might be someone who was 99% click backwards, but yet there was 1% genius that got through. Okay? Now, that's a dangerous combination. And it was lethal to him as well as tens of millions of people. So the question becomes, is 1% frontal lobe enough? And the answer is no. So,
I've got to say, I'm not sure I buy this. In other words, in my mind, such a charismatic, albeit evil person could have been using a great deal of his forward brain, but simply for the wrong reason. Look, most things we have on Earth, nuclear energy, you name it, brother, we'll talk about it. Most power on Earth of any kind has a positive and a negative, a god and a devil, a good and a bad, a yin and a yang.
Yeah.
And who's to say that we can't use as much of our frontal lobe or negativity as we do the Mother Teresa's of the world?
In a way, I understand what you're saying. I personally define intelligence, however, as behavior and thought processes that are life-sustaining.
But that's intelligence by our definition.
Do you
remember Independence Day, the movie?
Sure.
Do you remember when the aliens came down in the big ships over the city?
Yeah.
They didn't want to bargain with us, Neil. They didn't want some accommodation with us. They didn't want to eat us.
Oh, well,
they wanted one thing. They wanted for us to die.
Yeah, well, history is filled with more advanced civilizations conquering less advanced civilizations, aren't they?
You remember the one they captured? That's all they wanted. They wanted us to die.
Yeah.
Period. That was it. Now, you could say that's advanced intelligence, or you could say that's no intelligence at all based on our definition of intelligence. And we want to think intelligence equals good. Well, maybe it doesn't always.
Okay. There seems to be a game of leapfrog, I would say. It seems as though we're the more intelligence always eventually does a leapfrog and survives over the less intelligence. Hitler may have been very efficient at his negative types of things, but eventually he met his downfall by a more compassionate, cooperative, intelligent.
You know, it is true.
Society.
It is true.
So I think, you know, there's this, you know, there's two steps forward and one step backward. And I think people will find this is true on a personal level as well as a, you know, on the bigger.
And so then you are convinced that as we continue to evolve, not only will we become more intelligent generally, but we will become, from our perspective as we define it, better people. We will grow spiritually. We will have fewer Hitlers and Charlie Mansons.
We have to, or we will survive as a species.
Ah. So the very process of evolution itself dictates that we evolve in that direction, or we die, right?
Yes, and people, as people start to exercise brain self-control, and as they study their brain, this is what they discover, that cooperative behaviors and intelligence.
All right, Neil, hold it right there. We'll be right back. Neil Slade is my guest. We're talking about our brain. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Anybody out there want to take a ride inside?
Is here, and we're talking about reptilian behavior. At least we began by doing that. We're going to quickly get to cloud busting, and then, believe it or not, 1 hour orgasms. However, speaking of reptilian behavior, I'm sorry to have to report the following to you from Reuters News. Listen to this. Two Russian strategic bombers flew within striking distance of the United States last week as part of Moscow's largest military exercises since the end of the Cold War. This came out of the Washington Post, folks, quoting unidentified U.S. officials. The newspaper, The Post, said the Tu-95 Bear bombers were intercepted by four U.S. F-15 fighters and three P-3 patrol planes near Iceland early Friday morning and escorted in a clockwise flight around the island. Norway also scrambled jets to meet two other Tu-140 Blackjack bombers that flew down the Norwegian coastline, but Russian reports said the interceptors failed to reach the bombers before they turned back. U.S. officials told the newspaper the flights formed part of extensive exercises by Russian armed forces last week. Though Russian bombers did often probe Western defenses during the Cold War, officials said no such activity has been recorded in a decade, and the appearance of Russian long-range bombers over Iceland and Norway surprised NATO. The move, the latest in a pattern of perplexing Russian military actions in recent weeks, but brace yourself here, have prompted concern in Washington and elsewhere about President Yeltsin's control over his government and armed forces. Just 2 weeks ago, 200 Russian troops suddenly occupied, you'll recall, the Pristina airport in Kosovo without the consent of NATO leadership. The ensuing standoff was resolved only after days of torturous negotiations over what role the Russians would have with NATO in peacekeeping. So what are Russian long-range bombers doing probing areas close to the continental United States? Now, you might want to think that one over. Once again, Neil Slade.
Greetings.
And though we may disagree about the amount of negativity that can be used in the forward areas of the brain, I think that we do agree very much, Neil, that there is great power available in the forward part of the brain. It's getting there that
yeah.
seems hard. Now, you have talked about these switches, these switches to the amygdala, is that correct?
Yes.
So the way it is done, if you want to talk about cloud busting, dissipating a cloud, go out, lie in your yard, Nice day. Look up at the clouds. Find some wispy clouds. And try it yourself. I know you think it's crazy, but it will work. And Neil is about to explain the brain process that will allow you to try this experiment. But you can do it. How do you do it, Neil?
Okay. This is, like I said, it's a great way to demonstrate to yourself very quickly that what we're talking about here is
real.
Is real.
Yeah.
And, you know, this has been something that's been known in some circles for many, many years. You can find photographic evidence of this in books. It's mentioned in many different books, a book by Jesse Stern. There's even a Time Life book that has photographs of a German scientist doing this. And, you know, like you said, I mean, I've heard from thousands of people who it blows their mind. The idea is that you focus this chi energy or this life force or this whatever energy, this basic life force energy that flows through the body and the brain, you focus it forward. So it's not, you're focusing out of the me part of the brain, and you're focusing it out to the rest of the universe. Okay? You're completing the circle, you're letting it flow.
But this all sounds rather esoteric. There is a specific exercise, isn't
it? Yeah. Okay. We've got to locate your amygdala switches, okay? This is just like the switch. It's like the switch on your wall that turns your lighter on or off, or like the water faucet knob
right.
that lets the water go. So what you're going to do is you're going to click the switch to let the energy flow out of your brain.
And how do you click that? It's an imaginary switch. I mean,
it's a real physical organ in the brain.
It really is there, but you must concentrate and imagine that you have these switches,
you
right?
You have to realize that you have it. The amygdala comes from the Greek word meaning nut or almond, and it's 1 inch inside your temple. It's right between your inner ear and the back of your eyeball, okay?
Okay.
That part of the brain. And it just, you know, as long as you know the approximate location, because what you're going to be, if you know the approximate location, then you'll be able to manipulate it by changing your thought.
You ever have a car with overdrive?
Excuse me?
You ever have a car with overdrive?
Well, I got a 5-speed.
But you owe us 5-speed. Yeah, but they used to have these overdrive things where you would you'd press the pedal to the metal and something else would kick in suddenly.
Yeah.
And boom, you take off.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
And so isn't that kind of what it's like?
It's like most people are driving around in first gear and they don't know it. Their amygdalas are clicked backwards and only a trickle of energy is getting to the frontal lobes.
All right.
And this is because we are socially and culturally and evolutionarily conditioned to keep our amygdala clicked backwards. It's just something that humankind has not yet learned as a whole, how the brain works and how the energy flows. And there's a small percentage of the population that is now learning how to do this. Over many decades, from the scientific research and the work that Lingo did and from your radio show, we're now learning, we can click this switch forward and do and get the energy flowing into our frontal lobes and then do things with it.
So okay. Then you mentally go into a...
Here's what you do, okay? The amygdala, it's about the size of the tip of your thumb.
Right.
An inch inside each temple.
Yep.
Okay? Now, you can click it forward by imagining you have a feather. And you tickle the front part, not the back part. Because if you stimulate the back part of the amygdala, that causes the electrochemical activity to go backwards, back down into your reptile brain.
Kill, kill, kill.
It turns on the kill instinct. You turn into Charlie Manson.
Okay? So let's be sure.
But we don't want to stimulate that part. And we know from at the brain lab, when people did that deliberately, they got really, really weird scary.
Can we call this the American tickler?
The American tickler, yeah, I like that. So you pretend you have a feather and you're tickling the front part.
Yes.
And when you do that, and you first do it in a quiet room where there aren't any distractions, okay, and maybe your eyes are closed, maybe the lights are off.
Mm-hmm.
People experience a wide variety. Some people have very subtle responses. Some people have incredible dramatic responses. I get email from people who say, I did this lying in bed at night, and I started seeing colors and shapes, and my whole body started vibrating.
Right.
Some people say, all of a sudden, I automatically started smiling, and I don't know why. some people, one person wrote me this week and she said, I was getting waves of pleasure going through my brain. And this is how the body reacts when you start getting the energy flowing into the more advanced parts of your brain. Okay? So you tickle this amygdala after you've done it, you know, in your room, in a quiet place. One day during the daytime, go outside. Okay, and sit in a comfortable chair or lie down on the grass.
Right.
And you want to pick out a cumulus cloud. It doesn't work when there's a lot of wind. Okay, because the wind is apparently additional environmental energy that interferes with your brain energy.
But if it is a quiet, serene day with
when there's very little or no wind is the best. Cumulus clouds react to this type of experiment and thought process. If you try high cirrus clouds or thunderheads, it's difficult if not impossible. But pick out a cumulus, like a white cotton candy cotton ball type of cloud. So we know that people don't know what a cumulus cloud is, the cotton ball type of cloud,
sure,
right?
Sure.
Pick one that you can start out with a small cloud that's directly above, overhead. Maybe something the size that you can cover with your hand outstretched.
Okay.
You know, don't pick a huge cloud if this is the first time you're doing it.
Right.
Pick a small one, and it can be surrounded by a lot of other clouds. That's ideal because then you'll know that you're really doing this. Okay? Click the amygdala forward and imagine that energy flowing, filling your frontal lobes and then shooting out from your forehead.
Yes.
Okay? Directed at that cloud, and you're going to... As you direct it at that cloud, you will envision that cloud vaporizing. You're going to create this abstract image. You're going to move into the future and create that future scenario. And the cloud will be your subject. Within 3 to 5 minutes, the cloud that you pick will vaporize. It will disappear and leave all the surrounding clouds untouched. Now, if people think I'm out of my mind, and if they have a computer, or if they don't have a computer at home, go to the library computer, go to my website. I put this on videotape. I just took my old Panasonic ancient video camera, stuck it in the backyard, and pointed it, got a cloud right in the center of the viewfinder with other clouds around it.
In other words, the obvious cloud you were going to go to work on.
Yeah. And you can see it, and there's a time lapse of the photograph, like a real video, and it takes 3 minutes, the cloud vaporizes, and all the clouds around the outside of the view frame are left untouched. And
all
I
right,
did
so
it once,
words,
and then
yeah.
I did it right again.
I
didn't practice. I didn't do like 20 takes to do it.
Right.
Take one and take two, and then they, you know, that was it.
And so the proof is on your website.
Yeah. And, you know, the better proof is when you go out and do it yourself.
Do it yourself. You're damn right it is.
You know, I mean, I can tell you, people are going to say, he's nuts. There's no such thing as brain energy going out through the frontal lobes. Go out, bust it. First practice clicking your amygdala a couple times in an undistracted environment, and go outside one day, bust a cloud, and you're going to say, holy moly,
my
brain can do these things. I can't believe it. So
How is the brain? I would imagine even you cannot really explain the how part of it, can you? In other words, what process suddenly takes something that has been internalized almost completely and allows you to suddenly externalize, I mean, mind over matter is...
Well, we do have a good idea of what's going on.
First of all,
you have to realize the brain is like the most complex thing that we know of in the universe.
Correct, yes.
Okay? There's nothing out there with as many parts in it as a human brain. I mean, we're talking about, you know, even Carl Sagan said you have as many neural connections in... You have more neural connections in your brain than there are literally... protons and neutrons in the universe. Okay?
That's impressive.
You have 200 billion neurons in just the outer 1/6-inch layer of your brain. And each one of those neurons has 100,000. They're estimating between 50,000 and 100,000 connections with every other neuron, okay? Now, besides that 200 billion connection there, there's another white matter of brain that's an inch thick called the glial cells, and these are supportive cells, and there's well over 250 billion of those. So if you add up all the possible neural connections in your brain,
yeah,
it's more connections than there are grains of sand on the entire planet. So we're talking about something that is more complex than any computer we can even conceive
of. Well, you know,
of.
I was about to say...
So this is a very powerful device.
Yes, we are now producing computers that have clock speeds of 500 megahertz. I wonder what the clock speed of the human brain is.
It's beyond... It's, you know, we're talking trillions of calculations per second. So it's no contest. It's no contest.
Well, not yet. But they are coming up on a trillion calculations per second. They are coming up on that.
What I've heard is if they were to build a supercomputer that could handle the amount of information one brain could handle, it would cover an area the size of Texas and a mile high.
Well, for now it would.
Yeah. Maybe they'll get it down to the size of Rhode Island eventually.
Well, eventually they'll probably get it down to something you can put on your wristwatch, not in our lifetimes, but one of these days. They are definitely moving in that direction. And
by the way, you know, even as far out as some of these things I'm talking about, you know, Mensa International is coming out with a review next month, and they've been very... I heard from the editor of Mensa International.
Oh, no kidding.
And, you know, I mean, these guys are no dummies. And they're doing a very enthusiastic review of all the materials this next month. So, you know, people should know that, you know, this is not some crazy thing. This is all coming out of the newest science.
So Mensa, then, is prepared to review your material.
They're going to.
Well,
yeah,
that's very impressive.
Journal, and
very impressive.
People can find that on the web, and I'll have a link on my website. By the way, can I really quickly blurt out my phone number? People are falling asleep early. They have to get up, and if they want to make a phone call. And
well, I doubt they're falling asleep yet. I mean, we haven't told them about the one-hour orgasm that's coming up, but go right ahead. Yes.
Okay, if you want some more information or books, just call 1-888-331-7589, and you'll get all your ordering information on that. You can order by mail or credit card or whatever you want to do. And, of course, they can go to the website, which they can get through yours. But I'll give that number again, 888-331-7589.
What did they get there?
I've got a couple books. I've got the newest book is called Brain Magic, and it's $12.95, and it's a month-long series of exercises that we will teach you how to turn on all the infinity circuits in your brain and do all these things that we're talking about. There's a book called The Frontal Lobe Supercharge, which was the book that came out before that, and that really goes into detail
right.
of how to click your amygdala forward and why the brain works the way it does. And then there's a thing called The Complete Brain Book and Music Set, which, to my surprise, as many people are buying as anything, and it's got three brain books, those two books and another brain book, and 8 hours of brain, special brain music and audio book cassettes and an interview with TD Lingo, radio interview, and that's $59.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 25 years of work that I put into that, and people tell me I'm crazy to sell it for $59, but I don't, I want more people to get this, so I keep everything like as cheap as I possibly can. And also, I almost never get anything returned. People are wild about these books when they get them and very satisfied. So, end of commercial.
All right. Well, I'm glad to help you out there. I think that, obviously, you stimulate interest, and people who want to look into this further should read the books.
Well, you know, one thing I thought of, you know, people want to know what happens when I learn how to click my amygdala forward. And I made a list of 8 things that happen.
Mm.
And this is a direct result of turning on the other 90% of your brain. You know, if your amygdala is clicked backward and you're stuck into reptile brain, the reptile brain only makes up a very small percentage of your brain volume.
I would have thought the reptile area would have been responsible for the sexual urge, but we'll talk about that and the American tickler you would use to click forward to get this one-hour orgasm coming up. That's what we're about to talk about. Don't go away. 1 hour. I don't know.
It's so good, it's so good, it's so good.
Here's Neil Slade. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
All right.
And by the way, did you see the backwards amygdala click demonstration at my website?
No.
So a guy named Chris in Denver sent this to me. And, you know, people always want it, you know, people have to be clear in their mind what's the difference between clicking backwards and clicking forwards, because the way you get this big orgasm you're talking about is clicking the amygdala forward.
Right.
By contrast, you know, if you've got a computer, you got to check this out. It is, I can't describe it because it'll ruin it for you, but if you've got a computer, go check out the backwards amygdala click demonstration. And it, watching and getting this lesson off the net will give you an instant brain pop. I guarantee it. You will instantly pop. You'll instantly click that amygdala forward, and you'll get a pop in your frontal lobes, and you'll fall out of your chair when you see this. So anyway, that'll teach you what backwards clicking is.
All right.
You know, I teach people, and I've been doing it for 20 years, how to turn on the infinity circuits in their brain. And people, you know, I've written a list of 8 things that happen when you click forward, among them being an improved sex life. These things are things that people are telling me. They're not things I'm making up.
All right, well, that's fine. Tell me.
One thing is you find once you start turning on your frontal lobes and clicking your amygdala, good fortune happens continually, nonstop. Okay? I mean, if you ever had something, think about it, something serendipitous or wonderful happen to you right out of the blue that you weren't expecting. You know, or you
many times.
You find yourself in the right place at the right time, but you don't know why, right?
Well, actually, you know, my life has been such a roller coaster of incredibly good things mixed with incredibly bad things that I think my amygdala is sitting there oscillating.
It's going back, and that's what it does for most people. As you learn to control it,
yes,
you'll make the good stuff happen again and again and again, and you'll eliminate the bad stuff. And that's because as you turn on more of your brain, the superior logic combined with the new super sensitive intuition that you get, it'll guide you better than the fanciest radar guidance system made anywhere. You'll get what you need, and you'll be in the right place to get it. That's one thing that people continually report to me, that good things happen to them nonstop, okay? That's the first thing. Second thing is you get happy, okay? Happiness and satisfaction increases daily, and unhappiness and dissatisfaction becomes a faint memory. The reason is because as you learn how your brain works, you learn to directly stimulate the portions of your brain that cause pleasure. See, there are sites in your brain that
I will give you this much. I am absolutely convinced that almost all of sex is in your brain.
It is.
In other words, it really is in your brain.
Absolutely.
I've known that for a long time. But still, it's a big leap from there. I'm telling you the truth. I've never had a one-hour orgasm. I can't even contemplate what that would be like.
The Taoists and the, you know, in the Far East, you know, everyone's heard of the Kama Sutra, which is a very ancient text.
Yes.
About, and what that has to do with is channeling the sexual cosmic kundalini energy that resides, they say, in the base of the spine. Okay? And by certain meditative exercises.
Yes.
And certain yogic exercises, you can focus that energy and change the pathway in your body, and that will change your body's response. And there's a fellow named Mantak Chia who maybe about 10 years ago wrote a book on channeling this sexual energy, both males and females. In the in 1983, there was a scientist, a researcher at Stanford University, Alan T. Brower, who did research in behavior modification. And what he was trying to figure out is how people could improve their sex lives. And what he stumbled on as well was methods by which people could intensify and extend the peak pleasure response during intimacy, during sex. And
typically, now we know of some women, there's a small percentage of women who are able to achieve multiple and extended
I've heard of that.
Orgasmic.
Yeah, but what about?
It's a very small percentage of the population.
All right.
Can
but,
do that.
But still, what about men?
Men, right. Hardly any, you know, that's unheard of. That's unheard of.
Well, I want to hear about it.
Okay. Well, what Paul Brouwer discovered was that by certain types of behavioral changes,
yes,
which we now have identified as frontal lobes, thinking processes and behaviors,
yes,
males can also begin to experience multiple orgasmic experience and extend it beyond the 10 or 20 second average.
Out to an hour?
To a minute, to 10 minutes, to a half an hour, to an hour or longer.
Wouldn't that
Stanford University. Now, here's the clincher. Now, these Mantak Chia and the Taoists and Brouwer, and there have been other books that have recently come out in the past few years of how women and men can intensify and extend this experience. But what they've all missed is why this is happening. What is behind all of this?
Yeah.
And there's all these rules you've got. You know, I mean, there's all these things that you have to learn. And these are big, thick books. And you've got, you know, it takes you, you know, you've got to remember to do this thing and this thing. Here's the real clincher. T.D. Lingo, back in the mid-60s,
yeah,
okay, started teaching people how the human brain works, how to click the amygdala
right
forward, and how to turn on the frontal lobe.
Right.
And they were starting to tap into all the paranormal abilities that just came out of nowhere. They just started happening. He did, they did the Stanford-Binet, and they discovered people made 10 to 50 point jumps on the Stanford-Binet test once they learned how to click their amygdala forward.
Mm-hmm.
They did a test called the Getzelf-Jackson Creativity Test, 500 to 1400% jumps on that test once people started clicking their amygdala forward. And suddenly, what he was hearing from students, they would go home, do the exercises, and they started telling Lingo, this is what happened when I had sex with my girlfriend the other night. I went on and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
People were, without even trying,
mm-hmm,
just as a matter of clicking the amygdala forward without doing any additional exercises or anything, their sexual experience skyrocketed, okay? And he worked with these people for a long time, and he came up with his own ideas of why this was happening, okay?
Yeah, I'm trying to absorb this.
Okay.
I'm trying to imagine this. And
this is his model of why this happens. Why when you start to click your amygdala forward and start using your frontal lobes, why your sexual experience suddenly becomes wildly more intense and becomes longer and longer. As you begin to compute new thoughts, you make new neural connections in the brain. Okay?
All right,
and,
yes, right. I'm sure that's correct, yes.
Let's make an analogy, okay? If you're driving in your car and you're going 10 miles an hour,
right,
very little, a little percent of exhaust is coming out of your car because you're not using very much fuel. You're not creating very much waste material.
Right.
However, if you're driving a lot and you're going fast, you're going to create much more exhaust and create much more exhaust material. What Lingo found is that there was a relationship between the amount of new frontal lobe thought processes going on in a person's brain and the amount of orgasm that they had. If a person computed a lot of new thought, and we're talking about frontal lobe thought, which means cooperative thought, imaginative thought, creative thought, intuitive thought, and logical thought, you just like a car, when it's doing a lot of work, makes a lot of emissions.
You know, it seems to me, number one, you know, that if this is really possible, what you're saying, that...
Well, it's unquestionable.
Unquestionable. All right. Well, fine. Unquestionable.
But go ahead.
Both partners would have to do it, or it would be a disaster. I mean, what are you going to do with one partner who's at it orgasmically for an hour and the other who's done in the traditional 20 seconds? I mean, we've got a serious problem here.
This is part of the whole thing. When you begin to compute frontal lobe thought processes, you get out of the part of the brain that could just compute me, me, me. Okay? In other words, when you're in your reptile brain, it's almost like you're in an eggshell. You're just thinking about yourself. One of the keys to extended and intensified orgasmic experience is the cooperative part of the equation.
All right. Well, let me really take you out on a limb. I saw a comedy. I just can't remember. Ramona will remember it. But this guy had the power. Well, actually, he had the power to do all kinds of things with his mind. But one of the things he did in this comedy was he was able to take his girlfriend, who was lying in bed complaining about this or that, and every time she'd open her mouth, he'd cause her to have another orgasm. And she was going, well, she was going nuts. But she was, God, what movie was that and who was that? It's driving me nuts. But he was actually able to project that. Now, that's not really too far removed from cloud busting.
It's illustrative. As well, I believe. You know, it's like, okay, listen, if you're in your reptile brain, you're only using one brain, and in fact, you're only using a small percentage of one brain. But as you click forward into your frontal lobes, you're not just using your brain, you're also connecting to all the other brains out there, okay? It's like a cord, a connecting cord. All of a sudden, your brain is computing all the information in your brain, but it's also taking in the information of your partner, and it's also taking in the information of all the people around you and all the environment.
Right.
So as you're in your frontal lobes, it's one brain's energy plus another brain's energy, okay? And the further you're into your frontal lobes, the more you project that energy out from your frontal lobes, you're adding one brain plus one brain plus one brain plus 100 brains. It's like you're all of a sudden connected to the really big internet, not just computers, but the internet of brain.
Yes.
Now, when you add up all, when you combine the energy of all these thinking, mental things out there, these brains, these persons, the amount of energy that's going through your brain is mass multiplied. It's increased geometric proportions. And so the pleasure, not only just the thought processes that are happening in your brain, but the amount of energy that's going through your brain is increased dramatically. And sexual energy is a key type of energy that flows through the brain. And as you connect with all these brains, the sexual energy increases at will.
All right, but I would have thought that the entire sexual drive would have been very much a part of the primal primitive brain.
Oh, well, this is very easy to illustrate, okay? Chimpanzees, okay?
Right.
They have a big brain, but they have very small frontal lobes compared to humans.
Right.
Okay? Now, they've got a reptile brain that's about the same size as our reptile brain.
Right.
Chimpanzees' sexual orgasm lasts 3 seconds.
3 seconds?
3 seconds. That's it. The whole sexual act of chimpanzees lasts about 3 or 4 seconds.
Three seconds.
Now, it is not the reptile brain. You know, the reptile brain only computes reproduction, very basic sexual pleasure,
mm-hmm.
Okay, a very basic drive. It's over quick. What actually adds on to the sexual pleasure and the experience is the frontal lobes. The more creative you get, the more intuitive you get, the more cooperative you get, the more orgasm you get. Does this make sense? Okay?
Well,
It's the same. It's, look, take any skill that you have.
Yeah, I think the idea makes sense, but I have never done it.
There is one of the books that I offer.
Have you?
TD Lingo.
Wait a minute. Have you?
Yes.
You have?
Yes. One, there's
How does a human being endure an hour of orgasm. A straight-on question. How do you endure that?
Okay. A typical orgasm, you're familiar, most of your listeners are probably familiar with waveforms.
Waveforms.
Okay, waveforms. A waveform is a line that starts at a certain point and then it peaks.
Right.
Okay, and then it descends.
Correct, yes.
Okay, a line that goes up and down.
Yes.
Like the shape of an arrowhead.
Yes.
Okay, the typical sexual experience that people have is shaped like is
a waveform.
Is a waveform. And the shape of that waveform is it goes up very quickly and then it goes down.
Mm.
It looks like the letter A.
All right.
Okay, it just goes up and then
and
it's over and then it goes down.
That's right.
Okay? All right. Now, as one begins to increase the amount of energy flowing into the frontal lobes, that sexual waveform changes. Now, as you begin to click forward, okay, and you can do this during the act of intimacy.
Yes.
Also, I need to add this. This is very important. You don't need to have a partner to experience this.
Huh.
There are many single people out there, and everybody does it, okay? So this is something you can do with or without a partner.
Well,
if you're not married, you don't have a girlfriend or boyfriend.
You mentioned chimps.
No sweat.
You mentioned chimps a little while ago, right?
Yeah.
Well, while they may only have 3 seconds of the final product,
yeah,
they spend a lot of time in personal foreplay.
All that courtship ritual.
I mean, personal. Singular foreplay. If you've ever gone to a zoo, you
sure.
know that's true, right?
Yes, this is right.
My point is going directly to what you just said about you don't need a girlfriend or a boyfriend.
Yes, because this is really a brain. This is something that happens in your brain. You can do it with a partner, and you can do it without a partner.
That's the only point I'm
trying to make here.
I understand.
Okay? Wherever you're at, whatever your situation is at,
yes.
whatever your sexual experience is at the moment, you can multiply that times about 100.
Oh, my God. Well,
okay?
let me get
back to the waveforms.
Well, you can't because we're on the top of the hour.
Okay.
So it's a good place to hang them up anyway. You know, you've got to ask yourself, if everybody in the world had on a regular basis 1 hour orgasms, it would be a very, very different world, wouldn't it?
There'd be no more war.
It wouldn't be time for it. All right, we're going to break here at the top of the hour. Neil Slade is my guest, and we're talking about our brains, and yes, we will get the phone lines open. 1 hour. One long, incredible hour. This is Coast to Coast AM. Neil, you realize, of course, the makers of Viagra are going to have you killed. Listen, somebody writes in a bit of a challenge to you, and maybe you can explain this.
Okay. Were you on the air?
Well, hell yes, we're on the air.
I didn't know if this was a private...
No, that was a joke, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah. But somebody writes, does a pig have a large frontal lobe?
Okay. That's a question?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all mammals... Okay. As the brain evolved in mammals, okay, the more primitive and simpler mammals... let me put this another way. The brain is in layers. Animals like reptiles have this reptile brain,
simple
very
brain,
simple
yes.
core brain.
Yes.
Okay? The mammals added on another layer called the mammal brain.
Right. I understand that.
Now, as we get to more intelligent mammals, this mammal portion of the brain expands into a cortex. Cerebrum type of, we call it the cortex or cerebrum.
No, I've got all that.
Okay. Dogs, cats, pigs, they have the cerebrum. The front portion of the brain is the frontal lobe. The animals, like, if you look at a dog...
But they don't have the kind of frontal lobes that we have as humans.
Oh, no,
right?
No. That's what sets us apart from lower mammals.
Then the point of this fact, or the hook is, the person says, pigs, in fact, are known to have 30-minute orgasms.
they may have sex for 30 minutes. And from what I know of breeding animals, even dogs, the sex act takes may take a very long time because of the physiology of the sex act.
Okay.
But the pleasure response...
The actual...
The act, the pleasure... See, humans are able to experience a degree of pleasure that the lower mammals are not able to experience.
I've got you.
Okay?
Yep.
So we're talking about a neurochemical reaction that is intensified because of the additional neural connections that we have in our brain.
All right.
Pigs don't have the same emotions that humans have, and they won't experience the same degree of pleasure that we do.
Gotcha. All right, I want to go to the phones now and let people begin to ask you questions. Is that all right?
That's perfectly fine with me.
All right. Because I'll get in trouble if I keep going. So, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
How you doing, Mr. Art Bell?
I'm fine, sir.
Real good, man, I'll tell you. It's been I've been listening to you for years, and it's more than a pleasure just hear you guys out there talking about that one-hour orgasm. I've been around here for a long time. I'm older than both of you guys, and I've yet to achieve that much. Maybe about 25 or 30 seconds, but for a whole hour, I'd like to know more about that.
Well, you know, here's what people can do tonight. They can get started, okay? Now, putting your amygdala forward and getting your frontal lobes, I mean, this is...
Show, please, because nobody can hear the show and have that for an hour at the same time. They're going to lose a whole hour of time.
What you do is you start to click your amygdala while you're having sex.
Right on.
Do it tonight. Do it tomorrow. Next time you do it.
Do it later.
Yeah, do it later. Don't do it during the show because we want you to hear the instructions. Okay? Now, if you think you got a lot of responses to cloud busting...
Right.
The first time you click and you do this, it may add 3 or 4 seconds. The second time, maybe it'll add 15 seconds. And you'll find that even going through the day... See, here's the thing. You want to be clicking your amygdala forward all day long.
Right.
Whenever you think of it. Because what you do in the morning is going to affect your sexual experience in the evening.
Yeah.
You see that connection?
Yeah.
What you do in bed. It's the holistic picture.
Right on.
I know,
right,
but it also brings to mind this mental picture of secretaries suddenly sort of slumping in their chairs.
I hate to tell you this, Art. I hate to tell you this.
No,
the
granted.
People who get into this find that the pleasure goes on the rest of the day.
Right on.
Oh, my God.
Look here, I'm James Henry here in San Diego. I'm a deacon there in the church here in the San Diego House of Prayer. And I'm going to pray that I can make it that long without having a heart attack.
Yeah, all right, for you. Thank you for the call, my friend.
Okay, Mr. Hotfellas.
And listen, hey, do me a favor, will you, and report back.
I sure will.
All right.
I'll let you know what's happening.
Right.
Take care and God bless you.
Yeah, take care. Oh, God.
Hey, I want to add one thing.
Yes.
We were talking about the waveform.
Oh, yeah.
What you'll find is as you click forward and you start to change this experience, the waveform changes.
I would imagine it would rise and then stay on a level and then...
You're talking about is a... typically, it's a ramp. It's just a very sharp peak up and then
a
fast run down.
That's right.
As you change it, it slowly transforms into a sine wave, which has a smooth, slow rise... and then a slower, smooth descent, and it's an ascending sine wave, more like the waves of an ocean. See what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
Okay? And in this way, it doesn't go down as far, and then it can go...
Is it wouldn't it be good to have a personal set of paddles around? No, you know, the kind of paddles where they put it on one side of your chest and the other, and they say clear, and then they give you about 150 amps or something.
You'll be putting out 250.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Yes, good morning.
This is Jim, and I'm calling from Kansas City, listening to you on News Talk 710 KCMO.
Without attitude, right?
With attitude.
You got it. All right.
I I guess in relation to that last comment, I guess it goes back to what the old Latin lovers used to say, that if you wanted to make love to a woman that night, you better start doing it at 8 in the morning, huh? Well, I wanted to just take the moment or two I had to ask a kind of a quick light question and then kind of a rather serious question.
Sure.
I know, Art, you've had some pretty high-powered guests on, and we've had our minds blown several times by you and your program, but I think that history will probably record this as perhaps one of your most significant programs of the time. What I wanted to ask, first of all, on the light side, Mr. Slade, can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Is it possible to flip these switches forward and use this energy to, let's say, help somebody else to obtain a skill, like, let's say, learning how to dance or something like that? Can you help somebody with this kind of energy?
Oh, it's key. It's absolutely key. You know, I mean, when you're clipped forward into frontal lobes, your concern is beyond the self.
Right.
And if you're going to teach anybody anything, you have to be completely sensitive and aware of this other person. If you're clicked into reptile brain and you're in this eggshell type of consciousness, you can't be a good teacher. You'll be a horrible teacher, okay? If you click into the frontal lobes and all of a sudden your awareness extends beyond yourself and extends to your student and to the classroom, and you all of a sudden you become like a big radar dish and you're picking up stuff everywhere. And not only are you picking up through your eyes, your ears, and your senses, you're picking up through telepathy and precognition, you become a great teacher. So it's key. It's very key to teach.
And as far as the more serious question is concerned, if you've got your if you've got yourself clicked forward like that, some of the other things that Art keeps talking about, like contact with extraterrestrials or that kind of thing, is that not possible?
Oh, it happens. I mean, you will find that this happens. You know,
do you have any documentation of that, or do you have any case histories of that, or?
Well, I mean, this is the reports that we get. This is the reports that I get from people every day on my email, and these are reports that TD Lingo. I've got file cabinets in my basement of reports from his, the 305 long-term subjects that he had come through the brain lab.
Wow.
That this is exactly what they experienced. I'll give you a personal experience of contacting a non-physical entity. This happened to me about 3 months ago. And, you know, people are always asking me, well, can I win the lotto or can I win at gambling using my frontal lobes? And generally, you can't, because winning money and gambling typically is an egotistical reptilian manifestation. Mm. But on occasion, you will become sensitized to when luck is going to come your way, and you might be able to win money.
Well, that's what I was just about ready to ask. I mean, you could be egotistical and just think me, but if you truly are sensitized to other people, you said earlier that good luck tends to follow, and if you're just not expecting to win, like for me, example, I just go out and maybe spend a couple of bucks and say, well, it would have been just entertainment money anyway.
Yeah.
But if it just turns out that you really don't have any expectations, is it not possible for that to happen at that time?
Oh, yeah. And it happens to people, and it happened to me. As
wow.
I was going to say, I woke up one morning, and I had an intuition. It said, drive to Black Hawk this morning. And I went to, and Black Hawk is where they have gambling here. And I don't do it routinely. I just don't make a habit of gambling. But something said, look, this is an opportunity for you, and this is going to benefit other people besides yourself. So I said, okay, something is telling me to do this. And I went up there. When I got to the casino, I started communicating with a deceased friend of mine who had won two $14,000 jackpots.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I said, Dave, listen, and I was talking to a non-physical entity, to my dead friend, and I definitely felt like I was communicating to him, and I said, tell me what to do, Dave. So Dave, this voice in my head, Dave, said, go walk 20 feet this way. And I walked. He said, sit down in front of the machine and put in $3. And I put in $3, nothing happened. He said, put in another $3, and I won 60 bucks. And then this spirit said to me, Dave, he says, okay, you're done at this machine. go this way. And Dave guided me to another machine on the other side of the casino. He said, put money in this one. I won another $50 within like 30 seconds. He said, that's all you're going to win. Go home. And I said, well, and, you know, and the ego part of me says, well, let's just try a little more. So I put in a couple more
bucks.
And
that's when you screwed up,
didn't
right?
win anything. But I still with $100 ahead. I said, okay, Dave, you're right. I drove home with it.
Can you put us in touch with Dave?
Dave is laughing right now.
I guess the only
I'm in communication with Dave right now. He's laughing and laughing.
But I guess the whole upshot is that if you've got your heart and your brain in the right place, anything is possible.
You know, your frontal lobes are a brain magnet. It's like a magic mind magnet.
All right, and can I tell you one?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I live in the land of casinos and gambling. It's all around us. It's in grocery stores. It's in drugstores. It's everywhere. And I'm not a gambler, but, you know, I throw in nickels or quarters every now and then. And this is the truth, Neil. I don't have Dave. But I know when I'm going to win. I know when I'm going to win. I mean, there is no question about it. I can feel it before I go to the machine. I know when I'm going to win. Inevitably, it is right. And I also know, and that's most of the time, by the way, when I'm going to lose.
And it's not something you're controlling, really. It's just like today it's a sunny day or today it's raining, right?
Something like that, yes.
There's like a higher intelligence that's in control of it.
Yes. Well, you know? most gamblers are not at all in control, of course, and they just gamble. They don't pay any attention. They're way past those kinds of feelings. But there is a knowing.
Yes.
There is a knowing. I'll give you that. Very quickly, before the bottom of the hour, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
This is Todd in Salt Lake.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I had an interesting story that I read recently about Dr. John Lilly, the dolphin guy and the brain researcher.
Yes.
Oh, Lilly, yes.
Yeah, I guess early in his career, he was mapping out the monkey brain, and I guess they managed to isolate the orgasm center in the monkey brain, and they hooked the monkey up to electrodes and gave him a button so he could push and give himself an orgasm.
You're
once
kidding.
Every 3 minutes.
You're kidding.
No. And the monkey gave himself an orgasm once every 3 minutes for 18 hours straight.
And what was the result? I mean, did the monkey live?
Yeah, he did. If the monkey lived, he fell asleep and then he woke up
and started pushing the button
again. And started all over.
Can you hold on, sir?
Sure.
All right, hold on. We're going into a break at the bottom of the hour. Where's that button? It's right there on the side of your head, folks. The amygdala. The switch. And you can tickle it with what we lovingly call the American feather. And then 1 hour can be yours. And let me do it for Neil. He's got some books out, and if you would like to read more about what you've been hearing about tonight, you can get them by calling 1-888-331-7589. Again, 1-888-331-7589. Back now to Neil Slade and our caller. You're back on the air, sir.
Hello.
Hi.
You mentioned the area in the monkey brain. In humans, they've identified what's known as the septal area, which is very closely adjacent to the amygdala organ. In one particular experiment, they didn't use electric needles. What they used is an application of acetylcholine, which is one of the neurochemicals in the brain, and they applied this to a woman's septal area, and just this minute application of this particular chemical caused her to have the exact responses that we're talking about tonight with no other stimulation whatsoever.
Well, then,
now the amygdala, when the anterior amygdala is stimulated, this causes sensations of euphoria, of contentment, But all of these internal parts of the limbic system in the brain, they're all interconnected. So by clicking the amygdala forward, you indirectly gain control over the septal area and other areas of the brain which are responsible for physical pleasure.
Wow.
So in other words, in the right kind of a society, we could put buttons on all of our women. They get out of line, you just...
You're treading on dangerous ground there. Well, you know, I'll tell you something. Someone asked me this question. They asked me, how does this apply to criminals and convicts? And by teaching criminals to click their amygdala forward,
yes,
can we eliminate their violent behavior? And the answer to this question is yes, and it's been done. There was one particular study where they did use electroprobes and connected it to prisoners, violent criminals.
Orgasmic therapy.
Yes, I wouldn't say it was orgasmic. It was more of the euphoric feel good.
Yeah.
A more general feeling of this part of the brain gave them a feeling of general well-being. And they had a button with wires going into their head, and whenever they wanted to get a rush, they clicked the button. And it indeed eliminated the violent behavior in these criminals.
Well, I can tell you right now, such a thing as developed, it is going to be quickly legislated out of existence.
I'm sure it was. And there, you know, this was an experimental thing. One interesting thing, it was successful except for this one particular patient, or, you know, criminal subject.
Yes, yes.
And it worked for a while, and then it stopped working. And they found that he reverted back to his former self. And finally, they got around to examining him and trying to figure out why it wasn't working on him anymore. And one of the leads to the battery had become disconnected.
All right. Here's somebody who writes, I've got a quick question for Mr. Slade. I have been suffering, this is serious, from depression on and off for as long as I can remember. But recently I've noticed that when I begin to feel myself slipping into depression, there is what I describe as a kind of a stuffy or fuzzy feeling in the area directly behind and a bit above my eyes. This feeling continues until I begin to snap out of my depression spell. Does that provoke any thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like there's a physiological blockage of electrochemical activity. It may be due to many factors, but depression is what happens when your frontal lobes are turned off.
Uh-huh.
Depression happens when your cooperative, imaginative, intuitive, creative, all those frontal lobe circuits have turned off and life stinks. Your energy is blocked.
I know people virtually almost entirely in that frame of mind all the time.
Now at the Brain Lab, Lingo dealt with these kinds of people all the time, probably more so troubled people than just regular okay people.
Right.
And they learn to click out of their depression. And if you go on my website, I've got like 4 pages of people who give testimony as to what happened when they start clicking forward. And among those are many people who report, I was depressed and I read your book and I started clicking forward and my depression lifted. Now, I don't want to minimize this because depression can have many, many reasons. Among them may be a chemical imbalance in the brain and body, and I certainly don't want to discount anything that a doctor might prescribe. But by clicking the amygdala forward, it will give you added ammunition to overcome this problem, and it certainly has worked for many people. By the way, there is something I wanted to add, too. I put together a little 3-page supplement on this topic that we're talking about tonight,
right,
being the sexual response.
Oh, really?
And anybody who buys a book from me this week, I will throw in this book supplement with every book order, so I'm sure we'll have a lot of people who are curious.
You're going to have a lot of people ordering just for that.
Well, you know, people want to know about it. And it's the main thing is really learning about how your brain works. And you find as your brain works better, then your sex life skyrockets. And it's all key. It's a holistic thing, you know. You'll see that it's all connected. And so anyway, but I did want to tell people that I'll throw in that supplement, you know, because people are probably focusing on that particular topic
at
tonight.
The moment, at least. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, this is Allie Noor calling from San Francisco Bay Area.
Yes.
Hi, Neil. Hi, Art. Actually, I have two questions, and the first question is, when you speak of clicking the amygdala forward, it sounds like you're speaking of it in a singular form. And from what I've read in your book, there are two, one on either side. And I'm wondering, do you have to click each side individually, or when you click, do they just click together?
Yeah, good point.
Okay. Is this Aline that I've been emailing? Oh, nice to get you on the phone.
I know.
This happens. You know, Art, you know, people I'm in communication with somehow manage to get through.
It happens, yes.
After many phone calls.
Yeah. You have two amygdala, one for the left side of the brain and one for the right side of the brain. Normally, they work in tandem. They work together, like the two wheels of a bicycle. But it is possible for them to work independently as well. So one thing you can do is you can experiment as you understand how your brain works through the website and the books and from what we're talking about. You can click the right one forward and leave the left one where it is. Or you can click the left one forward and maybe the right one only halfway forward. Or you can do both together.
Right.
And and you don't have to do them together, but normally you just kind of do. And we say amygdala just because it slips off the tongue a little easier to think of, you know, one thing rather than flicking both the amygdala. So does that answer your question?
It does. It does. And I think that naturally they've just been clicking forward as I've been clicking forward. That's what I felt anyway.
Yes.
My other question is, earlier you were talking about when you're clicked forward and you're in this constant state of, you know, utilizing your frontal lobes, you begin to sort of have this contact with people around you.
Yes.
Sort of not a verbal contact, but more of a mind contact.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you're in an area where, say, you're in a socioeconomically depressed area and, you know, people tend to be more in a reptilian state around you, if that's going to affect you somehow.
What a good question. Very, very good question. Now, listen, let me follow up on that, too. There are a lot of people that I meet, Neil, that annoy the hell out of me in person. I mean, they just annoy me. They babble. They engage me in conversation that is either boring or annoying, or they're just annoying people. Now, could it be these people are clicked into the reptilian portion of their brain while I'm forward, or maybe I'm reptilian and they're forward, and I'm just ticked off?
It could be
either one.
Well, if you're allowing people to annoy you,
yes,
then you are definitely clicking backwards. So the real trick is when you're surrounded by negative reptilian people, to stay clicked forward. And this is something that you just practice and you get better at.
And then they won't bother you.
They won't bother you as much. Sometimes you'll see them transform. It's like contagious. They start picking up on your frontal lobes projections, and you change them.
Now, can we talk about size for a moment?
Okay. Size of brain.
Yeah. you are quick. There was a recent report that Einstein...
Yeah. Oh, okay, I know this report.
Yes, that Einstein's brain was actually larger. So, size counts?
As a general rule, it doesn't make much difference. And a good example of that would be women's brain versus men's brain. Women, as an average, have a slightly smaller brain than men, but they're not dumber than men. The one thing to consider is, listen, if typically most of us are only using an insignificant fraction of our brain...
You haven't done any research on blondes, have you?
There's some blonde jokes, but I've got blonde friends, so I don't want to get in trouble here. But
really, now, they did say that, and so does that mean anything, or does it mean nothing?
Well, here's what they found on Einstein's brain. It was the It was the parietal lobe of Einstein's brain, which is more in the back of the brain, which was, it was wider. So it did look as though he had more mass in this part of the brain that was responsible for, that would typically would do this math computation.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel like that may have made a difference. Also, there's a lesion. Now, you know, the outer part of your brain is really four different pieces. It's like, I'm trying to think of, it's like four sections.
Right.
The frontal lobe is the front part. The parietal lobe is towards the back and the side.
Right.
The occipital lobe is in the very back, and the
right.
temporal lobe is on the side.
Right.
And there's usually a, it looks like a canyon. It's a deep crevice that separates each part of the brain. They found in Einstein's brain, there was not, the parietal lobe was not separated from the front part of the brain.
Huh.
So they believe it, normally there's a big crevice there that separates the frontal lobes from the parietal lobe.
So there, he had connections that we don't have.
That's right. So they believe that, you know, they're speculating. They don't know for a fact, but there was this difference. So there may have been a more direct connection from the frontal lobe, which is the more abstract, it computes all the abstract thoughts and very advanced computations,
right.
to this parietal lobe. So there was a difference there.
All right. Fascinating. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hi, this is Frank in Knoxville, Tennessee. How are you doing tonight, guys?
Hi, Frank.
Just fine.
Good, good. My question for Neil, which he may have already covered, actually, because he mentioned euphoria, kind of a euphoric feeling. I've had an experience that I've only experienced it a couple of times, I guess we'll say during lovemaking, that kind of an energy force, not, I don't know if it's an energy force or not, but this tingling real kind of heavy energy takes over your body, and it's just
that goes way beyond the norm.
Yes.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been there.
Yeah. That's what I guess mainly my question was: is does that deal directly with that clicking the amygdala?
Okay.
I mean, can I? Would it be possible for me to explore more into this area by practicing what you're speaking of?
Yeah. You know, we're really focused on physical sexual pleasure. But what happens as you start to open up the circuits to your frontal lobes, this pleasurable sensation begins to occur at times other than purely physical stuff. And you start to experience these waves of pleasure during activities that you would not normally associate with,
couldn't that be somewhat problematic? I mean, you're in the middle of an important business meeting, for example, and
I think there's sort of like a governor.
I see.
On this.
That's good.
It never gets to, you know, you only allow yourself to experience the level of pleasure that you feel comfortable with.
I think I can agree with
you're
that.
You're not going to drive off the highway, but you may find yourself driving down the highway with a very big grin on your face one day.
Even in L.A. traffic.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I can agree with that. This is the couple of times that it's happened has only been with a, you know, someone that I've been very, I guess, very attracted to. So I think it's part, you know, had due to the enheightenment of it, you know.
Yeah.
Because it just really, you know, like I said, it's definitely something that should be explored. And I like the validity in the testing with the criminals and clicking the amygdala, because if that is something that in the future that could possibly be used as a therapeutic resolve to maybe get people back into the general public, then I definitely think that's something worth researching. Also,
I worked for many years at psychiatric hospitals in Denver. I created and led therapeutic art and music workshops, and we had one place, West Pine Psychiatric Hospital. We had a large group of very disturbed children who came from really wrecked homes, and they had attention deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to help them click their amygdala forward into creativity. We also did this in the Denver Public Schools, and on the website there's a there's an example of a musical composition that these kids, who were thought to have been uncontrollable, created. So, you know, this is really has practical and useful applications with people who are disturbed and have other behavioral problems.
Yeah, I can really relate to that because when I was younger, I guess I could almost be a poster child for some of the issues that Art Bell covers. But when I was growing up, I had a lot of depression, kind of manic depressive, and negative thinking, and you know, a lot of issues, and attention deficit disorder. And I found over the years that as my creativity, I've become more focused on my creativity. And, you know, having a computer system, the things that you can do are limitless now. And so that's been a big outlet for that. You know, if I didn't have a computer in my life, it'd be depression, you know, just a constant slew of problems. And, you know, I'm not saying it's the greatest thing in the world, but it definitely allows me to let that creative flow come out.
Scientists know that as you increase creativity, and the pleasure that comes from that, pleasure, creativity, imagination, as you increase those types of activities and those emotions, painful and negative emotions decrease.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a seesaw. So as you become more creative and more imaginative, all the negative stuff drops away.
Mm-hmm.
And as you learn how to click your amygdala and turn on your frontal lobes, all the garbage in your life disappears.
Yes. Still got a lot of practicing to do on this end for me, though. So
you practice your whole life. You start now and you go to forever, and you just get better and better.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it has gotten better over time. Now that I've become more aware of it, and I know that there are certain elements in my life that are actually there that I can control myself, you know, it's just you have to tune into the frequency, kind of, you know, if I can kind of put it loosely, I guess. Another thing that I wanted to mention is I heard a folk song called Click Your Amygdala.
You're kidding.
Okay. Now, this is kind of ironic that I'm on tonight.
I should really be using that for bumper music.
Well, you know, that's Eric Allen Vincent recorded that for me.
Okay.
Playing T.D. Lingo's banjo.
Huh.
And he did this about 5 years ago, and it's up on my website. Nard, if you want me to send you a CD of that, I will.
Well, by all means, because next time you're on, I'll use it as bumper music.
You got it.
Excellent. Neil, I'd also like to say it's a pleasure to meet you. I run a music website that has just, you know, 50,000 bands, tons of resources, and during the submissions, research and submissions, I came across your website, and it just blew me away when I heard that you're going to be on the show tonight, so it's really a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I'd like to thank you guys for your time.
Thank you
very
much.
Thank you, sir, and take care. I had no idea you had such a thing. Neil, you should have told me about that. I'd have been using it.
Well, we'll get it in the mail, and next time, and I'll tell you, Eric will be thrilled. He's probably listening tonight. He's a very creative musician who also knew T.D. Lingo, and he's been clicking his amygdala for many years, and his creativity is undeniable.
All right, well, listen, we'll do one more hour if you're up to it.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, good.
I'm feeling
great. In the meantime, if you would like Neil's books, folks, the number, and you get the special sexual insert.
No pun intended.
You call.
You're gonna get in trouble.
You call one. The hell with it. 1-888-331-7589. That's 1-888-331-7589. And Neil, hold on. We'll come back and do another hour of phones. All right.
Okie dokie.
Stay right there. Finally, something to chuckle a little bit about. But imagine a world where everybody had one-hour orgasms. As Neil said, no more war. Once again, here's Neil Slade. Neil, welcome.
Hello. You know, by the way, I want to mention, I autograph every single book.
You do?
That leaves here. I do all the... I make sure all the orders go out here, and I make sure everyone gets an autographed book. And I personally attend to these orders, so I'll be working probably 12 hours a day for the next 4 weeks.
Well, it's good for you.
Yes, but I'm happy to do it. People like to get a little personalized.
Oh, they really do. It's it makes it a kind of a collector's item, frankly.
Yep.
I love autographed books. I love them. And those are the ones that I generally end up keeping. All right, East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mr. Autograph, Neil Slade.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning. This is Robert from Toronto. Hi, Robert.
First, before the question, I wanted to encourage as much as possible that people use the Mantec Chia material along with Neil's material, simply because when they do, I've used it to go from a few seconds to a few minutes so far. But besides,
so you really attest to this?
Oh, absolutely. And you were talking.
I find it so hard to believe, but okay, fine.
The question I think that you're having difficulty with, Art, is what do you do with the excess energy? Well, you consciously and unconsciously transfer it to a different task within your body.
All right.
In other words, if I wanted to feel more creative, that's where I send it. The other benefits from it are chemical and surgical birth control. It's obsolete. Abortion becomes obsolete. Sexual couple apathy and breakups due to emotional problems are minimized. Life expectancy is increased. And that's why it's very important to use it. Now, add up the dollars that signifies, and you understand the global significance of Mantec Chia.
Oh,
now,
right.
You're a dangerous man, Art. You're definitely a paradigm shifter.
I met Mantec Chia years ago, and for people who are not familiar, he is a Taoist physician from what country? China, I believe. Is that correct?
The Philippines he lives.
He lives in the Philippines.
He went to China to get the material from some monks, Chinese monks.
Yeah, and the practice of channeling the sexual energy, like I said, goes back millennia in the Far East, but it's something that Westerners very few Westerners are familiar with, and so this concept seems almost unbelievable to them. And you also mentioned something about health, and as you learn to channel this energy and click your amygdala forward and properly direct the energy in your brain, it has significant benefits to one's health and life expectancy.
Well, you know, we were talking about direct wires to the brain a little while ago.
Yeah.
Here's a good analogy for you. The Chinese or the Orientals are more likely to do with their minds what eventually, if it became possible, a Westerner would have a little thing carried on their hip like a pager, and it would have a button on it. And here in the West, we'd push a button. Over there, they'd do it with their minds.
Yeah.
The reason for the life expectancy is his premise. The Chinese theory is that you have only X number of emissions that you can lose before you die.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with that. The Lingo and Brouwer are probably in opposition to that, and I also would agree with that, too. And there's where there's a divergence of opinion.
Yeah.
The Taoists believe that one needs to rechannel the energy and that you only get so many of these emissions that you call them. And I don't believe that at all. And I, to me, that's like saying, well, you can only spend so much money in your lifetime. In other words, you're given a limit. And I don't believe that. So I don't believe there's a limit to either the amount of pleasure one can experience or the amount of experiences one can experience in one life. So,
I feel that the
way that the Taoists and also Brouwer have looked at this phenomenon is limiting and is actually in some ways detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
It's too limiting to the concept.
This
so
is where
I think one needs to look at all the different approaches to this phenomenon and not be stuck on any one particular system.
Makes
because
sense.
There are many roads lead to Rome.
Right. Caller?
This is where Tantra and Taoism part ways. But what I find interesting is that apparently Jesus Christ also said the same thing that the Taoists say with regard to not losing your number of emissions. The question that I had more to the point, the reason that I called overall, is that picture for example, Neil, I've got a piece of marble in my hand. I've got an image in my head. I use your technique along with maybe even Monroe Hemisync series.
Yeah.
Can I then shape the marble into the image I have in my head.
Hmm.
I understand that there are some adepts in the world who are able to increase the size of the marble, but I want to shape it like, say, for instance, the crystal skull.
Yeah. So the question
Is your information helpful in doing that?
In other words, he wants a greater elegance of mind over matter ability.
I don't see any limits whatsoever, especially when you're dealing with the abstract mind. I think one can create anything in one's mind, and you'll find that has that carries over into physical reality. You know, whatever great inventions that we make, that's where they all start. They start in the frontal lobes and in the abstract.
All right. Well, the world is still puzzling over how the pyramids were built. The world is puzzling over how one man in Florida built this incredible thing that was just impossible for one man to have built, and a lot of things that we simply don't understand. Is it possible that certain individuals throughout history have really managed mind over matter manipulation, not just with busting clouds, but with lifting stones and doing things that otherwise could not be done?
Oh, absolutely. And I know people who have met people like that. Typically, they're not, I got some email about a fellow, and I'm trying to remember his name. He was able to levitate objects, knock blocks over with his mind. There's a very, very well-known holy man in India with millions of followers. His name is Satya Sai Baba. And people I know personally have witnessed him materializing objects, religious objects, in the open palm of his hand. There's a Ram Dass. There's a fellow named Ram Dass who's a very well-known psychologist who went to India. And his his traditional guru in India was also was able to do miraculous feats such as materializing objects. There are reports of this particular Maharishi being in two places simultaneously. There's ongoing reports of human people in human incarnations that have mastered this mind over matter phenomenon, and they're very rare people. They're not somebody you would walking down the street.
The work going on at Princeton.
Yeah.
Where they are proving that human beings can affect random number generators.
Yep.
I've got a software program I've been playing with now for a couple of years that I got from Princeton, or from the research that sprang from Princeton, actually. And I can do it. I can affect a random number generator. I have proven this to myself. So can my wife, again and again and again. Now, that's kind of an esoteric... almost esoteric, but very repeatable, very scientifically repeatable. But according to some of the things you're talking about, that's very crude research compared with what can actually be done.
Sounds like it. I think so. Mostly what I've seen in the communication and work that I've done with people is they spontaneously begin to experience all the paranormal types of abilities like the telepathy and the precognition and even PK. PK is a fairly rare phenomenon, the telekinesis, but it does happen to people. In the Brain Magic book, I describe how to make a very simple mind motor. And this is an experiment that I've conducted here in my own home, and which I've personally been successful with.
A mind motor.
And I've talked to a number of people who have also done this. It's a very simple thing that you can build with just stuff lying around the house. I'll give a brief description. You take a very thin strip of tin foil.
Right.
You crease it so it's in the shape of a V.
Right.
And then you tape a sewing needle, and I've used an acupuncture needle because they're very thin and offer very little friction. And you tape a needle upright on, say, a spool of thread, and then you balance this very thin piece of tin foil on the needle. And what you really should do is put a goldfish bowl or a bell jar or a clear glass bowl over it so it is unaffected by any wind in the room.
Yes.
And you sit and you concentrate on getting the energy to flow through your entire brain and out through the frontal lobes and push against this piece of foil. And you can make this foil turn with inside the glass bell jar. You know, you let it settle down so after, there's absolutely no movement. And I've done this a couple times, and it's just kind of like when it happens, you just kind of leap out of your chair. And it's very difficult. I can't sit down every day and do this. It's happened a couple times to me. I made sure there was absolutely no vibration in the room. And I've also heard from a number of people on the Internet who have contacted me who've reproduced the exact same experiment. And so that's a demonstration that people can learn to do themselves and experiment. But it's very difficult. It's rare.
Yeah, that.
But it does happen.
That's very interesting. That's kind of like the cloud experiment here on ground, right?
Yeah. For some reason, the cloud busting is easier. And I think there's a couple reasons. I think the main reason for that is because we're talking about water vapor, which is it's a more ethereal type of thing. It just doesn't have the kind of substance that aluminum foil does. Aluminum foil is a very dense type of substance, and we're talking about the PK emanations coming out of the brain are going to be a lot more evanescent. And so it's easier to move clouds than it is to move a piece of tin foil around. But it does happen, and you can do it.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
My question is, I was wondering if there is any evidence in the brain of amino acids related to lobe clicking.
Related to what?
The
lobe
sort of,
clicking.
Yeah, lobe clicking.
Oh, okay. Amino acids, well, they are the building blocks of life, right?
Or chemicals, you know, any sort of thing that is directly related to this brain function you're talking about.
Yeah, what about that? And what about chemicals? In other words, put another way, drugs.
Yeah. The impulses go through the brain by a chemical process. And nerve cells don't exactly touch each other. One nerve cell has many branches on it, like a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And these branches are called axons and dendrites. Okay, one is like a female plug and a male plug.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tiny space in between one branch of one nerve cell and the other branch. And this space is called a synapse. And when one nerve cell, one neuron, communicates or sends the message to the neighboring nerve cell,
mm-hmm.
it releases a packet of neurochemicals, and that's what...
Well, until you get to the chemical part, what you have described is a semiconductor.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
Right? In other words, you have... an impulse that is traveling through something that is otherwise not conductive, and unusual things happen when that occurs.
Yes, there's a barrier between the two cells.
That's correct.
And it's actually a physical space.
Hmm.
And the way that is bridged is by these packets of neurotransmitters. And these are molecules. And there's a huge variety of neurotransmitters that send different types of impulses, depending on, you know, what kind of information is traveling through the brain. And all these neurotransmitters come from protein molecules and that we eat. And certain chemicals in our bloodstream will have an effect that will either increase or decrease, or, you know, in some cases have no effect on the rate of neurotransmission between cells. In extreme cases, such as in psychedelic drugs, for example, if one takes an LSD, a P, piece of blood or acid,
right,
that causes a what's called a cascading towards the frontal lobes. It increases this sort of like wave of you get repeated waves of neurotransmission in the brain going towards the frontal lobes. Other types of drugs will inhibit this function.
Exactly.
So there's a huge variety. If you're probably protein deficient, your brain is not going to be it's going to have some trouble in transmitting messages. It's just going to, you know, be detrimental to your health and therefore to your brain as well.
I got it. All right, Neil, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we will be right back. I'm Art Bell. Okay, back we go now to Neil Slade. Neil, are you still there?
Still there. I've noticed, by the way, your music selections have been right on target tonight.
Well,
that has not gone unnoticed. Sometimes people from Canada, I've noticed, have not been able to get through to the 1-800 number. So if I could give that P.O. box.
You may indeed, yes.
For those people.
Sure.
People can order Brain Magic or the Frontal Lobe Supercharge. Canada cost me $2 extra to ship it to them. So if you do order from Canada, it's $14.95 for either of those books. And my address is Neil Slade,
mm-hmm,
P.O. Box 6799, Denver, Colorado, 80206. And, of course, if you're ordering from the USA, it's $12.95 for either of those books.
Always costs more for the Canadians.
Well,
They have more tax, and they have these guys who come and collect tax and stuff.
I know. It's kind of weird because it's like this artificial separation between them and us. But
I know.
That's how it is. But I do mail everything to Canada airmail. So sometimes they get it quicker than someone in the U.S. So.
Well, we're heard all across Canada, and I hear these complaints all the time about the tax situation. We've got it bad here, and they've got it worse.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Good morning.
Hi, this is Nancy at Lake Tahoe.
Hi, Nancy.
I find this very interesting, and I've had a question that's bothered me for a long time. My oldest son had an accident riding a horse. It ran through an orchard, and he was hit by a limb and broke his nose when he was about 8 years old, which would cause, I guess, a frontal lobe
impact.
And looking back, he never was really quite like he was before. And later on, he took his life. And I wonder if, you know, it was from depression. He wasn't a drug user or alcohol or...
Well, you raise a very interesting question. In other words, without proper frontal lobe activity, that eventually that might cause one in a constant state of depression to decide to take their own life, Neil?
Yeah, one can't generalize when you're talking about brain injuries. The brain is an incredibly complex organ. And, you know, a friend of mine who's a surgeon just remarked to me the other day, you know, sometimes people will have a very large injury to the brain and it has no effect on them whatsoever.
No, you are so correct.
And yet they may have a very small injury to another part of the brain and it has devastating effects.
No, you're exactly right, and my friend Terrence McKenna, I'm sure you've heard about him.
Yeah.
Terrence had a pretty good-sized tumor in his frontal lobe, and the diagnosis, I'm afraid, is rather terminal. But they eliminated a good 95% of it with the gamma knife, something called the gamma knife.
Yeah.
And the doctors, before the operation, told him, frankly, that it could turn out that there would be virtually no effect, or there would be a tremendous effect, and they really had no way of knowing.
Yeah.
So what you're saying must be true. There, it's
there's so much we don't understand. People have lost massive parts of their brain and come out of it in perfect condition. Others have had tiny damage and have been in comas for the rest of their life.
I think probably what is your name again?
Art.
Oh, the, not you, Art, the woman they called.
Well, she's now gone.
I think what her work would be at this point might be on her own thought processes and see how, you know, how she can modify how she's dealing with it and eliminate the negative emotion and thoughts that she might be having or distress over the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she can probably learn to click her own brain into a place where she's not feeling guilty or depressed over something that, you know, she was not responsible for.
Gotcha. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, hi. How you doing? I'm on the air.
Yes.
Art and Neil, how are you?
Hi. Fine.
Good. I'm calling from Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Canada, yeah.
Yes.
I'm sitting here listening to your show. And at the same time, I'm reading a book about advances in Tesla technology.
Tesla?
Tesla technology.
Yes.
And it's about the high-frequency active oral research project.
Oh, like HARP, you mean?
HARP. I mean HARP.
Yes.
I hope this isn't an unpopular subject.
No.
And it is, in the end of this, I'd like to spend a minute talking about what I'm thinking about, and then I have a question for Neil. And part of this book mentions somebody, Michael Hutchinson, describing the brain works with basically four wavelengths, ranging from 0.5 hertz to about 35 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of pages later, mentions John Hecature. He's a HARP program manager.
Mm-hmm.
Clear in an interview with the authors of this book that the uses of HARP were controllable, and some applications could be pulsed at 1 to 20 hertz range.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And then it goes on to talking about a project by the Air Force.
Well, to be specific with respect to HARP, sir.
Yes?
They don't actually transmit those low frequencies. What they do is they take two higher frequencies, if you can grasp the concept.
Carrier
waves. And they beat them together until they get very close to zero beat within a few cycles of zero beat. That's how they achieve the frequencies that are then transmitted, so controversial. They believe they may indeed affect human behavior.
Yes. Well, this is getting up to the question of a potential thing arising. And it also mentions a book by the Air Force on a radio frequency dosimetry ion book about the dosage of frequencies we put out and how it affects the human brain.
Yes.
And
all right. Well, I'm sort of with you here. Where is your question?
My question is just imagining, hypothetically, such a situation like that arise. How could one individual human being, this is for Neil, what could one do to resist that kind of thing, some electrical magnetic field?
Well, you may be a little bit out of his field when you ask such a question, but Neil, there surely is a lot of research being done about the effect on human beings of these low frequencies. That is true.
I get a lot of, questions and comments about people who do experimentation with sound modulation and how that affects brains in
mm-hmm.
terms of healing and mood and
so on and so forth. Oh, yes.
And generally my reply is that the conclusion that I've come to is that a healthy state of mind is achieved by exposure to a variety of frequencies and natural environmental kinds of things. I think when one starts to click forward, you find ways to put yourself in healthy environments and healthy situations. And this comes from using, you know, logic and intuition and all kinds of abilities that you have. So I don't think there is one particular thing that you would do to avoid unhealthy exposure to electromagnetic radiation or sound waves.
That's why they're working on it, because yeah. There's probably no defense. The only redeeming value that I've heard, and I've talked to a lot of people who are doing these experiments so far, Neil,
yeah.
They have been unable to avoid the operators of these machines being affected themselves. Now, interestingly, the HARP project in Alaska is operated remotely. It has the capability to be operated remotely, which means they don't have to be in the immediate vicinity of the machine they're operating. And I'll leave that to the audience to decide why that might be. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Good morning, Art. It's Charles from Grand Tower, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
Near Cape Girardeau. Yes, I have a question for Neil. It's kind of funny, actually. I'd heard that pregnant women, their brains shrink. Is that true?
I don't know about that. I've never heard that.
Pregnant women's brains shrink?
Yes, they've done like a couple scans. I think it was on the net.
I wonder why that would be. I've not heard of that before. Maybe it has to do with... No, I haven't got a clue.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there.
Well, I'd heard that on the national news. It's been about 3 or 4 years.
It may be true. There's probably, you know, a reproductive explanation for it. It's to the advantage of
the
baby that there's baby. Less fluid in the brain or something, but I don't know about that. Sorry.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Have a good night.
Question of the night. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hello, how are y'all tonight?
Okay.
All right, this is Josh in Texas.
Josh, do you believe that women's brains shrink when they're pregnant?
I don't know about that. But I was sitting there tonight, and I was clicking my amygdala for work.
Yes.
And at one time, I just told myself to get up and go to the phone and call, and I actually made it through in the first time.
There you go.
And I was curious if either of y'all thought maybe if, like, everyone in the world started doing this and practicing this more often, maybe we would have a better world peace around and all that kind of stuff. And if maybe this would be a way for us to become a Type 1 civilization.
Oh, now that's a winner. Have a better place all around, sure. But you know what he says, Neil. I'm sure you've heard Dr. Cuckoo on the various civilizations.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And surely progression past type 0 to past 1, type 1 rather, may include what you are talking about tonight.
I think it almost requires it. I think we have to get smarter and we have to use those frontal lobes types of behaviors to evolve as a civilization. You know, one can see one's personal life dramatically improve.
Mm-hmm.
You get along with people much, much better when you're clicking forward. You don't get in fights with people. You find yourself in situations that you find yourself not being in stressful situations. So if you multiply that times many people in the population, I think you'll find that's true. The TM people, many, many years ago found that when they had a certain percentage of people meditating, which is a frontal lobes type of activity, in a population, the crime rate went down in the particular city that they were trying to experiment in. So all the evidence leads to what this gentleman was proposing as being the case.
Well, the only place, Neil, that you and I disagree is with respect to the possible negative uses of these energies. I think they are equal to the possibilities of positive uses, and I know you don't.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how I can prove it, and I don't really want to prove it. I have done, as you well know, because you began them, now 8 experiments, grand experiments. The majority of them have yielded positive, absolute results. The word is not in on the last one yet, the most recent. We'll wait and see. But
well, you know what? Here's one interesting thing, though. You know, I get so much email and letters from people. I have not, and I've been on your show since, I think, December of 97.
Sounds about right.
100% of the people who are clicking their amygdalas report positive changes. I have not yet heard of one person who has attempted to use this for non-cooperative or destructive powers.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be a couple people out there doing it, I'm not hearing from them.
You remember the movie Contact?
Yeah.
When they were trying to decide in the movie if an advanced civilization would automatically be a peaceful or peace-loving civilization, whether the progression that you would have to make to get to the point where you could travel across vast distances and bend space and do all these whoop-de-doo scientific things, whether there would be a social change equal to that scientific advancement, which would absolutely tell you that these would be friendly beings,
yeah,
from our point of view.
Well, I think that's why the aliens haven't landed on the White House lawn, because these advanced civilization abilities don't go along with where we're at spiritually at this point, either because you can't, because they just don't go together, or they don't make it available to people who haven't answered that question.
So you're really saying Bill and Hillary would not be the ones to be first contact.
Doesn't look that way, does it?
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hi again, Art. I have a bazillion questions. I know we're almost out of time. I was thinking last night on your show last night about when you were talking about space and also chemicals, I was thinking about the Holy Grail. And I wondered if it might just not be a simple, like, tree that like, you put water in it and it gives you, you know, you drink it and it gives you immortality, basically. Anyways, I wanted to talk a little bit about light and sound machines and also sonic binaural beat
frequencies. We don't have a lot of time, so pick your favorite area and go.
Yeah, I am. Binaural beat frequencies. I wanted to know if there's been a... Well, I wanted to know about that, and also if there's been any research on that as far as clicking amygdalas, and also if there's any known plants or chemicals that can aid in this thing, like what does marijuana do, for instance?
All right. Neil?
Yeah. I tried a lot of brain machines, and I've tried biofeedback, and I've tried the mind stimulation machine, and so people up at the lab, and the conclusion that most of us come to is these are just mere toys compared to what happens when you start internally stimulating your brain. So they may be useful, but very limited usefulness, and certainly don't give you the kind of results that clicking do. In terms of drugs and chemicals, they can be useful, but the conclusion that myself and the same people come to is that you can get much, much more pleasure, and you can make your high sustain, you know, your euphoria sustain much longer without drugs than you can dependent on drugs.
All right. First time caller line. I think you're going to be the last call with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Eric in Salt Lake. I love the show.
Thank you.
Neil, I'm just wondering if you maybe believed in, I guess most people would call it a soul, and maybe stored in a certain part of the brain.
Uh-huh.
And if you believe that maybe something happens to us after we die, if we go on in some sort of, like, intelligent form.
Okay, all right. Well, that's a good straight-on question.
Yes. I most definitely believe in awareness and consciousness outside the brain and body. However, I talked about talking with my friend Dave, who is deceased.
Right.
One thing, as you begin to have more and more intense frontal lobes perceptions, becomes much clearer to you, and you do begin to perceive this awareness that exists apart from the brain, and body. And because of this, you lose your fear of death. You lose your many, many fears, but you become very much aware that although you reside in a brain during this lifetime, the brain is kind of like a shirt that you're wearing. And it's the radio receiver that you're that your soul is listening through in this lifetime. So you are in your brain, but you are not just your brain.
Well,
can I answer your question?
Yes. And the next time that I'm in a casino, I'm going to be trying to talk to Dave. All right. Well, listen, we're out of time. Show's over and all that. To order books, folks, the number is 1-888-331-7589. Once again, 1-888-331-7589. Correct, Neil?
Correct. Canada, P.O. Box 6799, Denver, Colorado, 80206.
And they're all autographed.
Yes, and this is your great art. Love being on your show.
It has been a great pleasure, and we will, of course, do it again, my friend. Thank you.
All right. See you.
Right. Good night. For those of you who are not caught up on what's going on with the litigation that I'm involved in right now, tomorrow night you will be. Gerald Fox will be here in the 11 to 12 o'clock hour, second hour of the show. And then our nation's only UFO lobbyist, Steve Bassett, will follow him. Good night, all.